coming at you almost live once again. It's Conspiracies and Cryptids with Sammy and Tessa.
Yay! Gosh, though, guys, I realize we have a problem. We have, like, a major problem.
Oh, God, what?
The penny for your thoughts is missing.
Oh, no. Is the shot glass missing, too?
The shot glass is here, but the penny is gone, guys. Who took the penny? Who's going to pay for our thoughts?
That's okay. I've got a penny that I was using during the entire time that you were gone. So.
Perfect. I mean, I did have a quarter as backup because, you know, there's apparently a change shortage, also a conspiracy.
We can say that it's inflation. A penny's worth a quarter after 3 years.
Exactly. We got a raise. Our thoughts are worth more now. But anyway, so yay, I'll let you take over then this time.
We do have a penny. So do you have any news updates or anything?
Oh, some new cryptid and conspiracy themed weird news.
Okay,
I do.
Yeah.
Funny, you should ask.
Okay.
Actually, I have two stories today.
Yes.
So we have apparently a Tennessee man left $5 million
okay
to his border collie.
Okay.
I mean, we love our pets. I wish I had $5 million to leave to Java, but I was like, and yeah, apparently he just really loved his dog, which we love Java. We love our pets. He didn't have any wife or kids, and he just had this, like, caretaker who is now in charge of the dog, and she's like, I don't even know how I could spend $5 million on a dog, but I'm going to try.
That's some, like, Aristocats level stuff.
Right?
Instead of leaving the money to the caretaker, you leave the money to the dog, and that's how you get... And that's how you get the caretaker trying to off the dog with creme de la creme a la Edgar.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. So hopefully her name is Lulu and she's 8. So
okay.
No word on it. Apparently it's going to go into a trust. So no word on what happens once Lulu goes to her farm, but to join him. But apparently, yeah. So that was one story I found. And the other one, did you hear about the nano chameleon?
No.
Oh my gosh, this thing is so... Okay, so this is a little... It's also a little Valentine's Day themed, because we are on Valentine's Day, if we are coming to you live and loud and proud, slash Singles Awareness Day.
Yep.
Happy to everyone. Happy day. So it's the nano chameleon. It can fit on your fingertip. It's so tiny, it fits on your fingertip.
Okay.
And it's like about the size of like a sunflower seed. And it was found in Madagascar during a German-Madagascar, like, conjoined science trip. They're like, field trip, going to Madagascar, going to go find some, you know, ring-tailed lemurs, and apparently nano-chameleons.
Okay.
But the fun thing about these little guys is, the boys are smaller than the girls.
Mm-hmm.
However, no matter what size they are, their genitalia makes up 20% of their body. 20%.
Oh boy, that is
That's not like if your extra leg. It's like if it was your leg.
That's
so they found nano chameleons with monster schlongs.
With giant peepees. Okay.
You don't know what to do with this information. I know. I don't know.
I don't know what to do. I don't know why I needed to know this, but I do.
Because
now.
It's science. This is science. This is the fun part of science, Sammy.
I guess.
But it's apparently very hard for them to mate. That's why it's so
I mean,
endowed.
I would imagine it's not only hard for them to mate, I would imagine it's hard for them to even move around dragging that behind them.
Exactly. Well, apparently that's to compensate for how tiny they are. Like, so they're, yeah, I don't understand lizard science. But
big
now, since I know,
small packages?
You guys know, everybody knows. Exactly. Small things come with big packages, apparently.
I guess, yeah. Oh, God.
Anyway. So now that we've started our episode with a little giggle and some romantic lizards.
Yeah. Now that we've done that, I think we should jump into our listener story section now.
Sure.
Since we decided we're going to do that now. We've got actually two submissions this week, which is exciting and awesome. Mm-hmm. So our first one comes from Craig, who uses he, him pronouns. So thank you, Craig, for normalizing pronouns. The subject is scary story submittal. I know it's really late. Well, it's not late anymore, Craig, because now we're taking them every all episode, the time. Not just Halloween. So Sammy and Tessa, hi, I realize this is kind of late. I just started listening to your podcast a few months ago and of course started from the beginning. So it has taken me a while to get caught up. This is why I just heard your Halloween episode, even though it's February.
Thank you for sticking with us.
Thank you. And welcome new listener. While many things throughout your podcast have made me want to write to you, it was finally this share your scary story thing that made me decide to go for it. Well, good. And I hope more of you guys start to share your stories with us, because now we're going to feature them every episode. So first, a little about me. I'm an older guy, or as Emo Phillips said, born at a more comfortable distance from the apocalypse.
I love it. I love it.
And my scary...
Welcome. Love the diversity of all of our listeners, too. Right? I love learning, like, who are you guys? I love
right.
it.
Right. My scary story starts way back when I was about 12 years old in the early 80s. Ooh, a Gen Xer. Hello, Xer.
Hello.
That was when I had my first experience with sleep paralysis. As I've said many times before, sleep paralysis just terrifies me, and I'm glad I've never experienced it. I think you've mentioned it on your show. Yep. And I'm aware of the psychological and physiological descriptions of the phenomena. I don't really consider it to be overly supernatural or anything, but I've had a couple of really weird experiences that I'm not sure I can explain. The first event that I can remember occurred while my family and I were visiting Nottingham, England. We stayed in a very old building that was being used as a hotel, although it had obviously been private homes at one point that had been joined together to form one big building. This also happened to be the first time in my life that I ever shaved, which might be considered a notable time in a young man's life. Okay, good point.
Yeah.
So in the middle of the night, in this very dark room in a creepy old hotel, I awoke with the classic feeling of being unable to move, really, really scared, and with the sense that there was some sort of presence standing at the foot of the bed. Instant chills for me. Just instant.
Ah.
When I was finally able to move, I woke up my brother and we turned a light on, but of course there was nothing there. While I'm perfectly able to believe that the place was haunted, nothing else happened during the two more nights we stayed there, and eventually I was able to convince myself it was just a hallucination. I don't recall any specific sleep paralysis events after that, although I think it happened occasionally until I was about 18 years old and going to college. One night I woke up with familiar paralysis, and this time I could hear what sounded like someone screaming, and it seemed like it was someone that I recognized. I also noticed that the digital clock that I had sitting up on a shelf at the foot of my bed was showing 10:04 p.m. It caught in my memory because I felt frozen for a very long time, but when I was able to move again, the clock still said 10:04. But here's the creepy part. The next morning, I found out one of my best friends had committed suicide. Oh.
Oh, no.
He was just a year younger than me and still in high school, but was taking classes at the college. I had spent about an hour with him that day up at the college radio station where I was working. He had mentioned being under a lot of stress, but not in a way that caused any alarm in my mind. They put his time of death as 10 p.m.
Ooh. I'm a firm believer that some people come through, the people that mean most to them. Yeah. To like,
I've heard a lot of stories about stuff
say
like
a little
that.
Bon voyage on their yeah. way out, you know, especially, you know, the world is your oyster. You know, you've been set free from, from the mortal canister, you know. So I'm a firm believer that people do tap
yeah I mean I've heard lots
out,
of stories so. About that sort of phenomena happening, so
I hope
it's
that,
not
I
uncommon
hope it was your buddy. I hope he didn't scare you. I hope that it and it was a positive. I hope it turned into a positive experience and stuff, but thank you for reaching out. That's really cool. Craig,
we're not done yet.
Oh,
we're not done yet, sorry.
There's more.
So after that, the phenomenon of sleep paralysis freaked me out a little bit more, and I think I even stressed about the possibility of occurring, which ironically may have caused more instances. For the next several years, it happened every few months. I eventually went into the U.S. Navy, and that's when I had my last experience with sleep paralysis. I was an electrician on a nuclear submarine. Yikes. We were at sea, way out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. I had been reading the book The Witching Hour by Anne Rice. I've never read that. One of the main characters in that book is an evil sort of demon creature called Lasher. During one of my sleep cycles, I woke up to a sleep paralysis event and had the overwhelming sense of an evil presence standing outside my bunk. I knew immediately that it was Lasher and was completely freaked out. When I came back to my senses, the absolute ludicrousness of the idea that a fictional demon from a book series had somehow found me in the middle of the ocean convinced me that anything I sensed during sleep paralysis had come from my own mind. I never had another event, but I've never been able to explain how I knew that my friend had killed himself. That one still makes me wonder. Keep up the great work, Craig.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
That was really interesting. Yeah, sleep paralysis is always, just as a concept, terrified me.
Yeah.
And I really hope I never experience it myself. So.
Oof. Yeah. Ooh. Luckily, from what I can tell, as long as you're healthy, and I obviously in some rare cases it can, like, you know, go on, and obviously the effects, you feel it like all day, feel it in your mm-hmm. bones and stuff, but luckily it will be over. Like, as he said, like, you know, when he started to feel it to the time that he was let go, it was probably less than a minute. It probably was still within 10:04. But I know it can feel like an eternity. Oh my gosh. But it is almost over. Once it starts, it's almost over. Woo! Woo! Got the willies.
Yeah, I got some willies as well.
Oh, so do nano chameleons, apparently.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Nano willies. Okay, so are you ready to shake the penny for your thoughts?
Let's do it.
Okay, so I think it's my week to pick. So I'm going to go ahead and pick heads.
Okay.
It's tails.
Oh, it's my, I get to go first.
You get to go first.
Huh. Hey, that's cool. Hey, rare. Maybe I'll let you shake.
I should lose. I'm in forever.
That's a lucky penny. I should lose that more often. And yes, for the first time in forever. Okay, let's see. All right, so I had a little fun with mine because obviously, like I said, I'm going to branch out a little bit from conspiracies. We're talking a little bit more science. We're going to talk a little bit more crime, but I want to go like ancient crime if we're going to do it. So okay. This one's kind of cool. So I got thinking about the word bog. Bog.
Bog.
Bog. It's such a weird word, right? But it's mm-hmm. like, they're vastly interesting ecosystems. I mean, we see them like in pop culture, like they're used in like Lord of the Rings and we usually see like really well preserved things, right? You're known for, they're ripe for conspiracies and cryptids. And in this case, possible human sacrifices.
Ooh, I do love me a good human sacrifice.
So we're going to discuss the Tolland Man.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that.
And so in May 6th, 1950, two peat cutters who were from Tolland, like this area in Denmark, their names are Viggo and Emil. They were just a few miles west of Silkeborg, Denmark. So they were out doing their thing. They're out harvesting peat and everything. And while they're working, though, they discover the body of a man tucked away in the bog. He's about 160 feet or about 50 meters from firm ground, because, you know, you can like step on a bog and it'll be like boom, boom, like a waterbed. Mm-hmm. It's like a little more sloshy. So he was about 160 feet from more like, you know, firmer ground. And then he was about 6.5 feet deep, or about under 2 meters or so of peat in the fetal position. So they uncovered him and they're like, oh my, that's a body.
Oh, God.
And so they dubbed him the Tolland Man because these two guys were from Tolland. So they're like, that makes sense.
That does make sense. Yeah.
This guy, the body that they found, he wore a pointed skin cap of sheepskin and wool, which was fastened under his chin by like a little strap hide. Mm-hmm. So he had like a little cap,
with a little, okay. little chin strap.
And then he had like a smooth hide belt around his waist, but other than that, he was completely naked.
Even except for darker, a hat.
Exactly. A little hat and a little belt. And he had, apparently even darker still, he had a noose that was made of a plaited animal hide that was pulled tight around his neck that then trailed down his back. So very clearly, that's probably what killed him at this point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But how did he get into the fetal position then?
Exactly. Okay. So something, there's a lot of questions about like, okay, because obviously, so I'll tell you why evidence as to why, like how this guy died is going to be kind of impossible to find other than this. Because other than those scraps, he was completely naked. He had deeply tanned chestnut skin. He had short cropped hair, mostly covered by that little cap, and a few days stubble on his chin and upper lip. Obviously, he hadn't had time to shave before his executioner gave him that new necklace. And other than that, his body looked kind of rubbery and a little deflated.
Okay.
But he looked like he died yesterday. Like this, I mean, it looked like he was a very recent murder victim. So the initial hypothesis is that this guy had died pretty recently within the past few days. But the reality of the story is going to take us back not just a few decades, but a few centuries.
Okay. So I'm guessing they carbon dated him and he was a lot older than they thought.
A lot older. A lot older.
Okay. So, now, I have heard stories of, like, you know, uncovering things in bogs that were perfectly preserved, not fossilized, not kind of almost mummified, but not even that, you know, like they were just well preserved.
And we'll talk about why that is and what breaks down so that things don't break down. Mm-hmm. It's pretty clear, though, that this guy died by hanging and somehow ended up tucked away in the bog. But there's still obviously plenty of questions that are left to be answered. Right. They did use the carbon dating, which we only started doing about 4 years before this guy's body was found in 1946.
So it was when a relatively we started new process.
Exactly. Especially for more like forensic things. So they found that the body didn't die yesterday or last week or last year. He died somewhere between 375 to 210 BC.
Oh my God.
That means he predates like King Tut by a couple years, like a couple hundred years.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I've started referring to like anything before 2020 as BC as well, before COVID.
Before COVID. Well, this is BC. So, but why did that happen, right? Why did he look like he died yesterday if he was still in the acid? So the acid and the peat, though, along with the lack of oxygen and the cold climate of the Nordic countries, the Tallinn man's body remained perfectly preserved for over 2,000 years. That acid is caused by bryophyte, which is a plant called sphagnum.
Sphagnum.
Sphagnum. And it fights that degradation due to the resistant phenolic compounds that are contained within their cell walls.
Interesting.
So, like, these things kind of break down so that, you know, basically everything else doesn't have to.
So they break down and perform or make like a protective coating over like organic material.
And then with no oxygen, there's no way for bacteria to grow.
Yeah, and so it doesn't oxidize and stuff like that.
It's not going to eat anything. Yeah, exactly. Huh. So all of his organs were intact, too. His heart, lungs, liver, all perfectly preserved. In fact, we're gonna go in there a little bit. He was so well preserved, they were even able to determine his last meal.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. His stomach and intestines were removed and studied, and they found that his last meal was likely some kind of porridge or gruel that was made with grains and seeds. In fact, they found 40 different kinds of seeds that were identified in it. Isn't that like...
That's amazing.
I can't even keep cilantro alive. Like,
Oh, that's incredible though. Oh my God.
But it was mostly made of barley, flax, false flax, and knot grass.
Okay.
This was a pretty common meal at the time, especially porridge in general. And they think that he likely died in the late winter or spring because of the absence of meat or fresh fruit, which wouldn't have been in season at the time.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy that we even know this stuff?
It's impressive.
That's insane. That's so cool. So they learned, though, that he was about 40 years old when he died through their own, you know, they counted the rings in his tree limbs.
Well, and this was before DNA testing, too.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, like, you know, I wonder if they've done, I'm sure you'll probably get to it, but have they done any like recent research on him, like since DNA testing?
They've done some. He mostly travels around as an exhibit and stuff, okay. But we'll get to that.
Okay.
He stood about 5'3" or just over about 6.5 meters tall. Mm-hmm. And he was so he's actually pretty short even for that time for that guy. But they assume that he may have shrunk a little bit in the bog. Okay, so the acid may not have eaten him, but it can still shrink things.
Yeah.
His body, though, was anybody that was placed in a bog is going to, decompose extremely slowly.
Right.
Because after the burial, acid starts tanning the body's skin, hair, and nails, but nothing necessarily decomposes or dissolves because of the low temperatures on top of that in Europe. That also prevents some of the growth of bacteria.
Right.
Also, as the sphagnum moss dies, it releases a carbohydrate polymer, which then binds with nitrogen.
Okay.
Which also stops the growth of bacteria, which then further mummifies the corpse.
So it was like perfect conditions. Like literally perfect conditions to preserve organic tissue.
Exactly. Because at the same time, then that same like polymer, I did a lot of reading on this. It leaches out the calcium from the bones.
Okay.
And that explains why after thousands of years, it looks like a deflated doll. Like,
okay.
So it's like your mojo's gone. You know, it's like,
okay, so it turned his bones to jelly basically. That would also partially explain why he was shorter, because it definitely, without your bones there to like give you structure, you'd be a lot shorter as well.
That's the thing though, he still has bones, because I'll show you some pictures and stuff, and there's a kind of a recreation of his body, because obviously they didn't have the kind of technology that we do today to preserve these kinds of things, so there is part of him that does still exist today, but we'll get to that. But obviously though, this guy had a noose around his neck, so the question here though is, was he strangled? Or did he hang? Because there is a difference. Like,
if he was hanged, he'd probably have a broken neck. Where it's like, if he was strangled, he might not.
However, scientists apparently were able to figure this one out too, because the rope left visible furrows on the skin beneath his chin and at the sides of his neck. However, there was no mark or like the knot. Like, that usually bruises the back of the head.
Right.
And there obviously, like you said, there would be damaged vertebra in the back of his neck that would have indicated that short drop and sudden stop.
Right. Yeah.
However, further investigation found that the Tallinn man's tongue was distended, which is, in fact, apparently a sign of someone being hanged versus strangled.
True.
I guess there's the way that it pushes up. So also a neat factoid about this guy. Apparently both of his feet and his right thumb were so well preserved that they were also hid those in formaldehyde. Mm-hmm. So that they could use those in later studies. They definitely preserved that part. In 1976, the Danish police actually took a fingerprint analysis of it, because then we had that part of our forensics. And that makes the Tallinn man's thumbprint one of the oldest prints on record.
That's incredible.
With a 2,400-year-old man's thumbprint. That's crazy.
Incredible.
Like, you think dinosaur prints are cool. Like, that's nuts. Everybody's pattern is different. Do you think it's ever repeated?
Yeah, it makes you wonder if somebody's got identical fingerprints out there somewhere. Like, there's only so many patterns you can do, right?
You would think, but maybe, who knows? I think that's just so bizarre, such an odd thought. But there's another theory about him. Mm-hmm. Some experts believe that rather being a situation of crime and punishment, that he could have been the human sacrifice, like I said.
Okay.
They attribute details like the position of his body and the fact that both his eyes and mouth were closed, too, as evidence of this. So it was he had a very reverent, almost like smiling appearance. People are usually, when they do see the exhibit that he's featured in, they tend to be really like taken aback because of how peaceful he looks. You wouldn't think that somebody who, was facing crime and punishment would necessarily look peaceful in that sense.
But if they felt like they were being sacrificed for a greater purpose, they might,
maybe. They attribute, to the people who stuck him there, though, too. Bogs were pretty special places. While most of Northern Europe is mostly really thick forest, the bogs obviously aren't. There's not a lot of trees. They're pretty open. They're overcast. And they're really, they're wet. But they're the connection to the sky and the ground is a little bit more muddled.
Okay.
Literally muddied.
Right. Yeah.
But they were also another mystery entirely because they're half earth, half water. And you also experience Will-o'-the-Wisps in Boggs, which were also considered fairies.
Yeah, I was about to say that ties in with last episode is they were often considered fairies.
Exactly. So was placing his body there considered a form of protection? And ooh. Was it that those, you know, was that more that he was... You know, he was being saved by being put there.
Right.
We've also found that there are similar bog bodies that are just like him. This Tolland man wasn't the only one there. In fact, there have been 500 that have been pulled out of all over Europe that have been dated back to the Iron Age and before. He actually predates the Iron Age, the medieval Iron Age.
Right.
You can actually visit the Tolland man, like I said, or at least his head. Because autopsies and insufficient conservation techniques obviously destroyed a large part of his original body, but his head is preserved and attached to a replica of his body in the Silkeborg Museum.
Okay.
In fact, here I'll show you some pictures of him here. So it's his face. See how well preserved he is?
I feel like I have seen him before.
And the rope, you see how well-preserved that was.
That's incredible.
And his hair and everything, because obviously they've removed his cap and stuff. But his body has been reconstructed for his display purposes.
Right.
But this is also a artist representation of what he may have looked like.
He looks like Kristoff from Frozen.
Right? Exactly. So I thought that was pretty interesting about him.
Yeah, totally.
Also, you can visit some of the other 500 bodies that I mentioned, though, too. The Boromos bodies, the Huldremos woman, the Grobal man are all on display at the Mosgaard Museum that is also in Denmark. Apparently, there's also 30 more that are currently not on display that are currently being used or stored for other studies. And I wanted to touch back on the idea of the Nords being aware of the preservative properties of the bogs.
Okay.
Apparently there's such a thing as bog butter. And I'm going to tack this on to the end of my part here because this is a little bit gross if you guys want to skip ahead through the break.
Okay.
But I thought this was kind of neat. So bodies aren't the only thing that ended up in European bogs, along with wooden bronze vessels, weapons, and other objects dedicated to the gods. There was also an edible waxy substance made out of dairy or meat. I'm not really sure what it is, but it's gooey and apparently it's good.
Okay.
Just a few years ago, like back in 2017, a turf cutter found a 22-pound hunk of bog butter in Ireland. It's thought to be about 2,000 years old.
Okay.
And while the smell is apparently pretty funky, it would spread just fine on a piece of today's toast. Like, it's like you could eat it now. There's some speculation that Northern Europeans, though, knew that this would preserve the stuff like bog butter for long periods of time. So why wouldn't they assume that of a body?
True. That's possible.
I don't know why you would need to preserve a body for 2,000 years. I don't know why you're going to need it then. But
who knows?
But I mean, this is kind of neat.
That is really neat.
That there are like things in the earth that can preserve things to the point that we can still recognize them and study them as if you can see them like yesterday.
Well, I mean, just think about like the LA tar pits.
Yeah, exactly.
Those have like preserved dinosaur bodies, you know.
Exactly.
And then we've got, you know, like woolly mammoths and stuff showing up in the ice that have been perfectly preserved. I mean, it's like there are ways to like preserve things. Now, granted, things like DNA and stuff break down even if they are perfectly preserved. But it's still neat how it can perfectly preserve the body. I mean, you look at like Jurassic Park and preserving the body of stuff in amber. I mean, that's something that happens every day, you know.
And we're really lucky that we live in a time that we can study things like this and look at it and be able to acknowledge the things that may have caused, you know, the cause and effect of these things. Because if you think about like George Washington didn't know that dinosaurs existed.
Yeah.
When you think about it, because why would they have known or had any thought about that?
Like,
you know,
the only thing that like may have been dinosaurs or like the legends of dragons and stuff like that. But I mean, it's like the concept of dinosaurs wasn't until like the 1800s, you know, like
exactly.
the first real like dinosaur fossils that were like at least documented
found and exchanged, and archaeology really started to boom when people could sell them and figure out what they were.
That wasn't until like the 1800s or 1700s. It's like
easier to sell something when you know what it is.
Yeah. So it's just, it's mind-boggling the fact that like all we know these days compared to just like just a couple hundred years ago.
Exactly.
You know,
our technology and knowledge have just exploded and stuff. So, you know, take your pick. Take your pick of any corner of science and you can find out just incredible things. You can just keep asking questions.
And now
we
literally carry the entirety of human knowledge in our pockets.
Exactly.
On our
cell phones. Just keep asking questions.
It's so cool. So cool.
So anyway, so time for a break. We'll take a quick one. And when we come back, it is Sammy's. We'll do another viewer submission, a listener submission. And then it's Sammy's turn.
Yeah.
All righty. Okay. And we are back, y'all.
We are back.
Oh, welcome. Okay. Well, we get some wiggles out, get sips of water, you know, and reset. Okay. So it's time for another listener submission. This one we got from Alexander Nye. Also he, him pronouns. Thank you for sending in your submissions, guys. Please keep sending them to us. We want to keep, telling your stories. We love them.
We love them so much.
I really
like
this.
You guys apparently love them too. So it's like, this is just, it's super cool hearing other people's like experiences with the paranormal and supernatural. It's just, it's fascinating to me.
This is a sharing circle. Welcome. So Alexander Nye writes, "Hey, Sammy and Tessa, I just listened to your most recent episode, heard from one of your comments that you're still accepting user submissions of crazy stuff we've experienced." Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
"I have one if you're willing, and I remember briefly, but my parents have retold me the story again after my asking about it since I was fairly young when the experience happened." Ooh, so that's interesting. Even your parents are in on, like, they're not in on this, but they're like, "Oh yeah, we remember that story. That's, ooh, I love it."
Yeah.
Accomplices. "So when I was young, probably age 4 to 7-ish, my parents took up a part-time job in the early mornings delivering our local newspaper each day around town." Hey, my brother did that too. "On mornings I didn't have school, or sometimes when both of my parents had to go, so I wasn't home alone, my parents would take me along with them." Of course, that's smart parents.
Right.
"This is usually about 4 or 5 in the morning when they would go, so I don't remember many of the times with them. However, this certain experience has stuck with me and my family. As I was riding in the back seat of our family Land Rover during a specific newspaper route, I was looking out the window and I remember seeing a little girl outside playing dressed in a white dress." She was a kid. I don't remember what age, but I doubt she appeared to be more than 9 years old. It was nearly 20 years ago, so I don't remember the details too well." I gotcha.
Yeah, it makes sense.
"However, the weird thing that stood out to me was that the little girl was almost glowing." Ooh. "Not like in a blinding light kind of way, but more like an obvious white features contrasted with a dark or 4 or 5 a.m. environment." So eerie kind of. "She was almost completely white and stood out so obviously against the dark grass and homes behind her. She didn't look at us. Didn't really make any acknowledgement of me or the car or anything, but she was just running around kind of like little kids do when they play outside and play pretend. She was just so clear, not anything close to how you'd see somebody else outside at that time of night. It was also just her, no adults or any other kids. I asked my mom, 'Did you see that little girl?' And she said she had no idea there was anybody in that yard. She asked me to describe the little girl a little bit and thought it was strange. I never saw the little girl again, even in the future ride-alongs with the paper route. I still remember the house and even drive by it frequently during my high school and college years. I never saw the girl again, though. I only remember seeing the girl, and I don't remember much else except for the pale white and visible she was. To this day, I wonder if it was a ghost or a spirit or something, or just a random Mandela effect type of thing. I hope you guys like it. Thanks for a great show. Hope you're both doing well. Thanks so much, Alex."
Neat.
Thank you much, Alex.
That's creepy, but
Very creepy. Very, very creepy. I would love to find out if like a little girl ever lived in the house.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting to learn.
So. Or if somebody's got a little sleepwalker.
That too. Yeah.
Very, very likely. Interesting. Well, thank you so much for sending in your submission. That is super awesome.
I
wonder if it was a spectrum. That would be very cool.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into my cryptid now. So I first learned about this cryptid almost a year ago on like I heard about it on And That's Why We Drink. And I've wanted it to cover, or I wanted to cover it since then, but I didn't want to like, I wanted to space it out and do my own research because I didn't want to come across like I was just copying them. Mm-hmm. Because they've started covering some cryptids here and there at this point, you know, so kind of stepping on our toes a little bit, Em and Christine.
Mm-hmm. I see how it is. I see. They come on our podcast, or you get the producer on our podcast, and then she's got all kinds of ideas, huh?
It's okay. But yeah, so I learned about it from that podcast, and like I'd wanted to cover it, but I wanted to space it out. But then recently we've gotten a lot of memes shared with us about this cryptid. So I felt like I really needed to just give the people what they want and talk about him. So today I'm going to talk about the story of the Dalby Spook, more famously known as Jeff the Talking Mongoose.
I love it. So, I love it. Jeff the Talking Mongoose.
Yeah. I mean, we've literally gotten like a good handful of memes about Jeff the Talking Mongoose. And I'm like, okay, I get it. I'll talk about him.
Okay. All right. We'll do it.
So in September of 1931 on the Isle of Man, which is a real place that I didn't know existed and is an island between Britain and Ireland.
Not the aisle of the grocery store where you just go shopping for a man. I'm sorry.
Right. And it's also not the Isle of Dogs like that one movie.
That's such a fun. Oh, I love it. It's side note. Ian noticed that was on Disney Plus the other day, and he's like, I Love Dogs is on Disney Plus. And I was like, yeah, great, cool. I remember like thinking it's like, you know, some Disney like, yeah, I Love Dogs. Mm-hmm. Yes, I Love Dogs too, dear. And then it dawned on me like, oh, right. Isle of Dogs is on Disney Plus. Okay, cool. Like,
yeah, anyway. I haven't seen it. I've been meaning to sit down and watch it. I've heard it's really good. So
watch it. It's so good. Okay, it's so,
I will
so
have to
good.
Check it out.
Anyway, yeah, you guys too. Anyway, sorry. Side
note. Go ahead. So anyway, September of 1931 on the Isle of Man, there was a farm owned by the Irving family, which consisted of James, Margaret, and their 13-year-old daughter, Vorey, which is V-O-I-R-R-E-Y. I've never seen that name before this story, but yeah. They had begun hearing noises in the walls of their house, like scratching and vocal noises that they described sounding like they came from a ferret. So they thought it was like ferrets or rats or something like that. However, over time, the sounds became hissing and different vocal noises that resembled dogs and even human babies, and then became sounds similar to children singing nursery rhymes.
Creepy!
Before finally a fluent voice came out that introduced himself as Jeff, spelled G-E-F, who is an earth, he described himself as an earthbound spirit born in New Delhi on June 7th, 1852, and was currently inhabiting the body of an Indian mongoose.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did he have to spell his name for Starbucks or something? Is that why we know it was G-E-F?
I have no idea, but apparently he did spell it for them because we do have confirmation that it was spelled G-E-F.
Jeff the Talking Mongoose.
So Vorey, who was one of the only people to ever claim to see Jeff, claimed he was the size of a small rat with yellowish fur and a large bushy tail. Once Jeff got to talking, he had a lot to say, mostly about himself. He was very extra and very conceited. He described himself in various ways, including, I'm an extra, extra clever mongoose. He also said that he was an earthbound spirit and a ghost in the form of a mongoose, and once said, I am a freak. I have hands and I have feet, and if you saw me, you'd faint. You'd be petrified, mummified, turned into stone or a pillar of salt. So,
salty.
Very
oh my.
Salty. A salty mongoose.
A salty. I've been assaulted by Jeff the Talking Mongoose.
Also, it ties into like the whole mummified thing from
no
your
story. Kidding. Oh my gosh. That's like, God, Jeff is rude. I wanted Jeff to be cool. Like
he was kind of cool. Like he helped out around the house. He was like a form of pest control. If somebody left like the stove or the fire going when they went to bed, he would turn it off for them and put the fire out.
Nice.
So he did help out, but he wasn't always great either. You know,
but he's all like, if you see me, I'm terrifying. Here's my, look at my hands and my feet.
Mm. Yep. But he was also very arrogant. He was his own biggest hype man.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
He would say things like, I'll split the atom. I am the fifth dimension. I am the eighth wonder of the world. He also is on record saying, I have been to nicer homes than this. Carpets, piano, satin covers on polished tables. I'm going back there. Ha ha ha. So basically he's like, this house kind of sucks. I've been to better places.
I'm picturing the little pirate critter thing from Ice Age. The fourth one? The dinosaur one that has like the little snaggle tooth and the eye patch. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't remember, but I'm sure.
Shame on you.
It's been a long time since I've seen any of the Ice Age movies, honestly.
That's what I'm picturing. All I remember is snarky.
All I remember is Kid the Sloth.
Not Kid the Sloth. No. Anyway, continue. The viewers know what I'm, listeners know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
So Jeff also liked to make veiled threats. He once said, I am not evil, but I could be if I wanted. You don't know what damage or harm I could do if I were roused. I could kill you all, but I won't.
Oh, how gracious. Thanks, yeah. Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff. At one point, like, Veray, who was, like I said, the daughter, was terrified of sleeping in her own room at night because she was scared of what Jeff would do. So, you know, she would sleep in with her parents, and Jeff was, like, quoted saying, it doesn't matter where you can hide or where you hide her away, I will find her.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And
rude.
It was just super creepy. It also became evident that Jeff wasn't bound to the form of the mongoose, and had the ability to shapeshift and even become invisible.
Oh,
one
my.
Notable account of this is an incident reported by the father, Jim Irving. One night in 1932, when Jim and his daughter were home alone, I copied and pasted this sentence from like Wikipedia or something, and it makes no sense. One night in 1932, when Jim and his daughter were home alone in broad daylight. Yeah. I'm assuming
close.
It was daytime. So anyway, one day, I'll just say one day. They were home in broad daylight. Jim witnessed an unusually large orange cat that was quote unquote striped like a tiger. Knowing that it wasn't a normal cat, Jim loaded his single barrel gun.
Freaking white people have to shoot everything.
I mean, at least he's not American this time. At least he's not American this time.
That's still white people. Poke it or shoot it, apparently. Apparently.
Once again, when in doubt, shoot it out.
Oh, God. No.
So he loaded his single barrel gun and followed it into an open field. The cat then turned a corner and vanished. When he was telling this story to his wife later, Jeff called out from inside the walls and said, it was me you saw, Jim.
It was me, Jim.
It was me.
It was me, Jim. It was me you saw,
Jimothy.
Jim.
It was me.
Jimothy.
So,
but was it Jim with a J or a G?
It was Jim with a J.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So, in the 1930s, things still went viral, just not the same way as they do today. And Jeff was no exception. It wasn't long until the story of Jeff the Talking Mongoose was being featured in tabloids and magazines the world over, with journalists coming to the Isle of Man in droves in order to document their own Jeff sightings and experiences. Many visitors, both local and from out of town, claimed to have heard Jeff's voice, with two even claiming to see him. One journalist with the Daily Dispatch from Manchester, which was Jeff's first appearance in mainline press, wrote, had I heard a weasel speak? I do not know, but I do know that I have heard today a voice which I should never have imagined could issue from a human throat. That the people who claim it was the voice of the strange weasel seem sane, honest, and responsible folk, and not likely to indulge in a difficult, long, drawn-out, and unprofitable practical joke to make themselves the talk of the world, and that others have had the same experience as myself. So basically what he's saying is, I heard a voice, it didn't sound like a human voice, and the Irving family, they seem sane and honest, and they're not making money from this, so why would they lie?
Interesting.
Is basically what he, like, to paraphrase that, because it was kind of, for 1930s, that is very old English eloquent speak. But yeah, basically he's saying these people are sane and they're not making money off of it, so why would they lie? Not to mention other people have heard the same things I've heard. So
interesting.
Yeah. In 1935, Richard Lambert, who was known as Rex for some reason, who was the editor for the weekly BBC-owned magazine The Listener, along with his friend, famed paranormal investigator Harry Price, decided to take on the case of Jeff for themselves. Under the direction of Price, a hair sample that Jeff claimed he plucked from his own body was sent to biologist Sir Julian Huxley and naturalist F. Martin Duncan for examination. The hair, however, was found to be from a dog, which Price concluded may have been from the Irving family's sheepdog.
Mm.
Price then sent a set of paw prints and some teeth marks that were in plaster, allegedly made by Jeff, to be evaluated by Reginald Pocock, or Pocock, who worked at the Natural History Museum. Pocock couldn't identify them as belonging to any known animal, though he did concede that they may have been made by a dog. These haven't been made by any known animal that I can find, but maybe a dog.
Maybe a dog, I don't know.
He also said that maybe they were just like scratched into the plaster with a stick. So.
Ah, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be manipulated.
Yeah. After James died, Margaret and Veray left the home in 1945. They reportedly had to sell the farm at a loss because it had the reputation of being haunted. In 1946, actor Leslie Graham bought their farm and claimed in the press that he had shot and killed Jeff. The body displayed by Graham, however, was black and white and much larger than the famous mongoose, and Veray herself was certain that it was not Jeff.
Probably a house cat. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe just, you know, like a mongoose a that he stuffed and killed, or a skunk. True. Or something. Yeah. In 1970, journalist Walter McGraw tracked down Veray Irving and persuaded her in an interview where she stated, "I was shy and I still am. Jeff made me meet people I didn't want to meet. Then they said I was mental or a ventriloquist. Believe me, if I was that good, I would jolly well be making money from it now. Jeff was very detrimental to my life. We were snubbed. The other children used to call me the spook. I had to leave the Isle of Man, and I hope that no one where I work now ever knows the story. Jeff has even kept me from getting married. How could I ever tell a man's family about what happened?" Veray died in 2005, maintaining that Jeff was real until the day she died.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
As far as explanations for what Jeff was, Nandor Fodor, who was a psychologist and research officer for the International Institute for Psychical Research, stayed with the Irvings for a week without seeing or hearing Jeff. Fodor did not believe deliberate deception had occurred and molded a complex psychological theory to explain Jeff based on a split-off part of Jim Irving's personality. So basically, he thought that Jim had, like, multiple personality disorder.
Yeah.
And that Jeff was just, like, a split personality.
Interesting.
Which, by the way, if you haven't ever looked into the Institute or the International Institute for Psychical Research, it's really fascinating. You can actually become a member to this day if you want to. Like, you can buy a membership online. So
interesting. We'll have to explore.
We might. Harry Price observed double walls of wooden paneling covering the interior rooms of the old stone farmhouse, which featured considerable interior airspace between the stone and wood walls that make the whole house like one great speaking tube, with the walls acting like sounding boards. So basically, it was a stone farmhouse that had been like modified to have wood inside the stone walls. To add like extra insulation after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
So basically he said by speaking into one of the many apertures in the panels, it could be possible to convey the voice to different parts of the house.
Oh, interesting.
So it would like echo, like you could talk into like a hole in the wall in the bedroom echo into like the kitchen on the other side of the house.
Interesting. That explains it.
So he said that's a possibility.
Interesting.
Some psychic investigators thought Jeff was maybe a poltergeist or a ghost because Jeff was known to like move things around the house and throw things at people. According to paranormal investigator Joe Nickel, researchers have suspected Veray to use ventriloquism and other tricks, the effects which were hyped by family members, reporters in search of a story, and credulous paranormalists. Mm-hmm. Also, you have to remember that this was at, once again, the height of spiritualism, mm-hmm. which we've talked about multiple times in this podcast. People were looking for things to believe in.
Yeah.
You know, and they were willing to believe pretty much anything.
Anything. We've covered some crazy things.
Yeah. I mean, the fairies last week was during the height mm-hmm. of spiritualism, and people wanted to believe it, even though, like, the girls admitted they were cardboard cutouts, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And then the last explanation, Professor Jeffrey Sconce from Northwestern University wrote that the most likely explanation is that this extra, extra clever mongoose was actually an imaginary companion created by the Irving's extra, extra clever daughter. So basically, they thought it was her imaginary friend.
Yeah.
So that
is... I wonder if it was a combination of things.
It might have been. You know, it definitely could have been. I mean, maybe it was a tulpa. We've talked about those very briefly in the past, like, first season of this show, where it was like,
yeah.
A tulpa is basically, like, an imaginary friend that you will into existence,
mm-hmm.
sort of thing. Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
But anyway,
it's
so that's a very, very... summarized version of Jeff the Talking Mongoose. I didn't want to go too far into depth, but he was kind of a jerk. He was not the nicest, not the nicest person. Or
I was prepared to be on Jeff's side.
Oh yeah, you're just thinking it's going to be this, you know,
like
cute little talking mongoose. But no, he's kind of a nano Willy.
He's kind of a gurk. Exactly. He's a nano Willy. Oh my gosh. So I guess technically from the scale of things on a, anyway, I don't want to think about a lizard penis anymore. Let's no more lizard penis math.
Please not. Okay.
Well, anyway, that was awesome. Thank you, Sammy, for sharing.
Of course.
That was really cool. And that's a very interesting, I love how much science we got covered in this episode. Like so sciencey.
So sciencey. Oh my gosh. Super sciencey.
So
sciencey.
So anyway, guys, if you want to send us more of your submissions and your stories, don't forget conspiriesandcryptids@gmail.com, and we will read them. And we want more of them because that was all the ones we've got, guys. We need more.
Send us more.
We just dumped our mailbag out on the floor and there's only two. And that's fantastic. And I love it. And I wish there were five.
I mean, if you think about it, that's an email a week because we go 2 weeks between episodes. So
it's so true. And let's bring them on. Bring them on, guys.
Keep bringing
more.
Exactly.
Let's hear your scary stories.
But
so anyway, thanks for joining us today and every day. And mm-hmm. we hope you guys continue to listen and enjoy us. And we're happy to be back.
Yeah. Always happy to be back. So, thanks again. We'll be back on March 1st with another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids. And don't forget,
Big Brother is watching.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids with Sammy and Tessa. If you'd like to learn more about us, you can head over to our website, conspiriesandcryptids.com.
If you'd like to get in touch with us and keep up with what we're up to, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Cryptopod, CryptiPod, or email us at conspiriesandcryptids@gmail.com.
Finally, if you're vibing with what we're doing, we'd really appreciate it if you left us a 5-star review on iTunes. If you don't feel like writing a long review, just put Big Brother is watching in the description. And don't forget,
Big Brother is watching.